Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the We Are Gamers podcast. I'm your host, Justin. With me, I have Lawrence.
Hello, everyone.
I have Ryden.
Hey, guys.
And I tweeted it out earlier. We do have a special guest for the show today. We know we didn't release a show yesterday, but we wanted to make sure to make up for it. We gave you guys a little something special. We have a special guest with us, Liam O'Brien.
Hello, everybody. Hello, boys. Thank you for having me onto the podcast.
Oh, hey, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Liam has been in everything. I'm not sure if that's an exaggeration or not, but going back as far as Naruto Gaara, he's also Captain Yoshito Ukitake in Bleach. For the non-anime watchers among us, he is the Red Skull in Marvel's Avengers Assemble, as well as Disney's other various Marvel products since the merger. And recently, he voiced Golem in Shadows of Mordor. So, Liam O'Brien, everybody.
Hey.
Hi-ho. This is Liam O'Brien here.
How's it going? How's it going?
Pretty good. I'm going to try to keep my energy up here. I'm a little sleepy today. I didn't get too much last night. I got kids. And yesterday I ran 13 miles, so I'm a little loose.
You know, jeez. Kids and a 13 mile run might do it to you.
That'll
just
do it.
Might do it to you. So do you just run for personal health? Do you do marathons, 5Ks, or?
I've not done, the only sort of official run I've done was a zombie run a couple of years ago. I just do it for health and stress relief as I juggle the kids and work and all that.
Well, I'm not sure how a zombie one could really be stress relief getting chased by.
That was not stress relief. That was pretty awesome, though. That was a couple of years ago. Have you guys heard about the zombie runs they do around the country?
There is one in Baltimore near me. Yeah. It normally comes up right around my birthday. So
it was pretty awesome. It wasn't what the videos made it seem like it was going to be, because every video I saw was deep in the woods. It looked like, you know, it looked like the woods around any Resident Evil city. Yes. We're in Southern California, so I was out in a dirt patch, and it felt more like Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. but still good health. I went with a bunch of other actors in the field. I went with Troy Baker, Laura Bailey, Sam Riegel, Travis Willingham, Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, Yuri Lowenthal, more than that, but I'm going to stop doing such a long list. And all a-holes in the first degree. And we ran it once and then relaxed with a beer for an hour, and then four of us snuck back in and did it again. So,
well, because that's what you do after you survive the zombie apocalypse. You got to sit down with your bros, mm-hmm, and grab a beer.
And then test it again. How are you all today? Where are you all?
Well, not too far from London myself. These guys are, I can't remember, somewhere near New York, I believe.
All right.
Yeah, yes, Justin, the East Coast. Lawrence and I are on the East Coast. Like I said, I'm closer to Baltimore. Actually, okay, right outside of where Otakon is held, right, okay, out from the harbor. So.
Yeah, and I'm legitimately in Brooklyn, New York. So.
Yes. Yes. I'm tri-state area kid, so.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Weehawken, does that mean anything to you?
It sounds like it should.
If you know Hoboken, you basically know Weehawken. It's, yes, the town over from Hoboken. Jersey, baby.
Oh, man. So my one Jersey story. All right. Going to New York, taking the train to New York. It's early train. I'm asleep. We're around Trenton, and then something wakes me up. I can't tell what it is. I look out the window. The sky is orange, and there's just this scent permeating the train. And I'm like, what on God's green earth is this? I look over at my then fiance, and she's like, oh, no, we're just in Trenton. That's all. Just passing through.
Yeah. New Jersey's actually quite beautiful. 90% of it is. It's just everyone's familiar with a crusty booger that lines the northern edge of it.
And that's what I've heard. That's what I've heard.
It's all farmland, beaches. It's gorgeous. I didn't see any of it growing up, but it's gorgeous.
Oh, well, we scraped the surface of your long, long career. Not just with, well, we only highlighted the voice acting, but you also do directing, if I'm not mistaken.
I do when I have spare time. I actually started directing with anime dubs, just like I started with voice acting. Everything started with anime dubs for me. And I did a little bit of the schmacting in New York on mic, and then eventually my wife and I decided to try Los Angeles. We figured if not, better sooner than later. And maybe something will happen with voiceover, and it did. But I was plunking around as an actor, and then someone decided that I wasn't a total idiot and said, you seem like you know what you're doing. Would you like to try writing? And then a little bit after that, directing. And plunked around in a lot of anime for a lot of time. And then eventually that led to directing VO for Resident Evil. Resident Evil 5, I actually co-voice directed. I mean, there are a lot of chefs in that kitchen, but co-voice directed with Stephanie Shea, who you are probably familiar with. And then I soloed Resident Evil 6, and from there jumped into, I did a ton of voiceover direction for The Last of Us. I directed a lot of the orcs for Shadow of Mordor. I like to think of myself as sort of a Swiss Army knife for the industry. I definitely like acting the best, but I love the director's chair as well.
Okay.
Boss people around. Well, tell them to scream.
Well, when you are directing any project, what is sort of your approach? How do you, when you, let's say you're given a new project, what do you look for in terms of, all right, this is what I want to make sure I get out of my actors, this is what I want to make sure that the audience receives? What are you looking for?
Well, I guess you decide early on what the tone of your piece is. You know, what's a good example? Resident Evil is a different tone from The Last of Us, is a different tone from Saints Row. So you're going to try to get different performances depending on what kind of project you're doing. It's like, the difference between doing, I don't know, Noel Coward on stage as opposed to David Mamet or Shakespeare. Everything's got its own tone. And it's sort of a binary job. You've got all the cutscenes you have to do and the sort of dialogue and story that links into the gameplay. That's what everyone thinks of. And then the other part that nobody thinks of, or maybe more and more as games have been around longer, but there's the oceans of reaction sounds and barks and all the stuff that soldiers yell and civilians scream as they're being chased by something without a head. It's a weird business, man. The only thing that unifies all of it is that it's all bound in Excel. I never knew.
You just can't escape that program, can you?
Can't get away from it. When I was in acting school, memorizing Shakespeare sonnets, I didn't know that it would eventually lead to Excel, but it has.
All roads eventually lead to Microsoft Excel. No matter the field, no matter what you're doing, it'll always come back to Excel.
That's very sad.
I mean, not for Microsoft, you're making a killing.
Yeah.
Do you get sort of the same satisfaction in creating a character when you direct it as you do when you actually voice the character in terms of the emotional output and what goes into the character?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I have an idea of what I'm looking for without it being too rigid. And I'm lucky enough to work with the most talented people, in the field for this stuff. I've had actors bring me to tears, make me squirt milk out of my nose. All of my peers who I enjoy acting is the opposite of as well. I direct a little bit in theater, and my roots are really in theater. And so both acting for performance capture and directing when I do remind me of my theater days. So I really like working with actors. I've spent my whole life doing it, so it just feels natural to me.
I got that same impression when I was chatting with Richard Epcar before and Ellen Stern. They were both saying about the whole theatre thing, and that's kind of what where their base tends to be as well.
Mm-hmm. God, have you ever met a man with such a high pitched voice? He's like the clearest falsetto you've ever heard in your life, Richard. Hopefully your nads will drop one of these days. He will truly become a man.
See, he's hearing this. He's no, I need them to stay right where they are. This is working out for me right here. This is working for me.
Yeah, he has the chords of Godzilla. Anyway, moving on.
we mentioned that you are in Shadows of Mordor. You also directed the Orc Reactions. Is that the only thing you were directing for that project, or were you?
And that was a lot. There was a lot of cooks. And games have, you know, everyone's like, who's the director? There's many directors. There was the main cinematic director, Christian, who, you know, has worked from Red Dead Redemption and many other games. So he carved out the cinematic scenes. He worked with Troy as Talion and Alistair as Celebrimbor. And then Jack Fletcher, who has directed a ton of games, many of the Final Fantasy games, voiceover. He directed the dub for Princess Mononoke, which is one of my favorite things in the world. He directed all the in-game VO and any fixes or ADR that needed to be done on the cutscenes. You know, all the sort of central characters. And then JB Blanc and I directed for months. Months we had guys coming in and you know, yelling bloody murder.
There was a lot of orc voice in there.
It's so funny too. God, some of it was so disturbing and hilarious at the same time, and they're really well written. So I mean, if you were trying to have one man or woman do every little piece of the game, it would take too long. So they need to split things up for their deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what is, or from your experience, how was it different from directing that portion of it to actually being a voice in the game?
Oh, well, just totally different. The orc stuff is so, well, I mean, I'm only about 4 or 5 hours into Mordor and loving it, but I don't know how Gollum jives with gameplay, so maybe my answer would have been different if I'd gotten further into the game, but they're really kind of two worlds for me, because all my scenes that I did as Gollum, I didn't have any contact with orcs. It was just me and the Bright Master and Talion. So it was very intimate working on those scenes. And then the orcs was just, it was like directing an army of murderers. Also, when I was directing the orcs, I didn't break my kneecaps off. I am not a spring chicken. And I did all the, in case anyone didn't know this, I didn't just do the voice of Gollum. I was full performance. I put on the monkey suit, the rubber suit, and...
Wow.
And scuttled around on my, you know, just like Andy Serkis did, scuttled around.
I was going to say you went full circus.
Full circus, yep. And the cutscenes were hard. And I mean, it'd have been hard if I were 20, but I'm very far from 20. And in addition to the cutscenes, I also had to do locomotion as Gollum. So, you know, when you control Nathan Drake in Uncharted, yeah. Nolan actually had to walk around a bunch, and they scanned that in and took his walk and for every jump and every climb and all that. Well, they did the same for Gollum. So I spent a couple of hours just monkey climbing up walls and running back and forth across a football stadium sized room in that crouch. And the running was especially hard, because on every third or fourth gorilla lope that I would do, the left knee would smack into the right inside of the right leg. And I walked out with a grapefruit-sized purple welt on the inside of my leg at the end of the day. Most physical thing I've done in ages. And it's been about 6 or 7 years since I've been on stage. So performance capture really, really scratches that itch. So as much as it killed me, I would do it again in a second.
You know, I have to say, the result was fantastic. I was really impressed with the Gollum in the game. I thought it kind of really captured very much to what Serkis had done in the films, and it didn't, didn't really feel like it deviated a lot. And you captured the voice perfectly. The movement was spot on.
Thank you. That really got
a feel for the character. So
that was the goal, and it really was a dream job for me, because I've been in love with Tolkien's book since I was a little kid. I have the copy that I had from when I was a little kid. I used to watch the animated Hobbit. I don't know if any of you guys have seen
yes.
that, but that movie from back when we were kids. I've watched that 20 times at least. And there was a point in high school where I started doing drama and was obsessed with that book and other books like it. And I really, that was part of what made me want to be an actor. And I of course adored Serkis's performance in those movies, like everyone did. And at, you know, a certain point, not a couple of years ago, shortly after those movies came out, I and a lot of people, I figured out that I could do a pretty good approximation of it, and thought, well, and I, you know, I would trot it out around town when I'd be in sessions for other things, just because it's fun to do. But thought, well, this is just a parlor trick. No one's ever going to hire me to do this because he's penned into the story that he's penned in, and they're not going to, you know, we're not going to recreate it. Or if they do recreate it, they're not going to do the exact same vibe that Serkis did. And I was dead wrong. And got invited to play him on another earlier game a couple of years ago, and that led to this game. And it really is probably my favorite job that I've ever had.
So you talk about trying to sort of recapture what Serkis did. How do you tackle roles where, if we take Red Skull, for example, there is a myriad of Red Skulls out there. How do you say, or how do you look at that and say, you know what, I want to take a little bit from this, a little bit from this, and put my own spin on it? Or do you just go in completely blind and say, no, I am going to own this character. This is what I'm going to do with him.
Hmm. Well, gosh, every part is different. And I know for that one, they were looking for not an exact match, but the feel of Hugo Weaving from the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that what I'm doing has sort of evolved from my very first audition, which was extremely Hugo Weaving. But that happens a lot. I mean, when we audition for stuff, even if it's a new character that's never been done, the people who are creating the game or the animation, they'll often say, well, he's okay, so he's an ogre, but it's like a cross between, just imagine if you took Steve Buscemi and he had an accent like Stephen Hawking. You know, that's a terrible example. They'll grab pop culture references or other actors or performances, and they'll say, we're looking for this plus this, and let's see what that sounds like, what your version of that is. Gollum, though, was totally different because they weren't looking for, hey, we're looking for a twist on what Andy did, or, you know, a new spin. They're like, we want to continue. We want to make this feel like it was just, you know, an extended movie, another piece of that same greater whole. And it was, you know, it was daunting to do. Because his performance is so beloved by me as much as anyone else, but it wasn't so daunting that I didn't love every friggin' minute of it.
Excellent. And like I said, I was convinced. I played. Well, I haven't finished playing, but to where I've got to so far, just that even the first kind of meeting with him and the movement and the voice. If I wasn't, you know, if I didn't know myself, I would have just thought that Serkis did it. So,
has anyone gotten to him singing in the game?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yes.
I am looking forward to that. That was a favorite moment from the recording process.
Yes, singing the little rhymes and sort of scuttling across the floor.
Mm-hmm. Tolkien has a lot of song in his stuff. So
yeah.
What sort of adds to the feel of this low fantasy world that he's created? You sort of expect there to be some sort of rhyme in it.
Mm. Are you all playing?
I have a feeling it's just me.
Yeah, okay. I think it's just Raiden, but my brother is playing Shadows of Mordor. I just haven't gotten started on it myself.
It's pretty darn good. I mean, if it was another fantasy game and not Lord of the Rings, it would still... It's really good. Like the nemesis system that everyone's talking about is really gratifying, and it looks like butter.
Yeah,
that's actually what interested me most about the game, that system. And I don't think we've seen anything like what Shadows of Mordor did with the nemesis system in gaming yet.
Yeah, I'm sure people will be cribbing it.
Oh yeah, you can't look at something like that and say, all right, how can I not put this in my game? Like it you have to put it in. You mentioned that you were playing and you're about 5 hours in. What is, from your experience so far, what are you enjoying most about it?
I like to find orcs who are voiced by my friend Sam Riegel when they're in compromising positions and kill Sam from behind. I like doing that in The Last of Us as well. No, the combat is real. I mean, everyone says it's reminiscent of the Arkham games, and I believe that's true. I haven't played much of the Arkham games. So my first 30 or 40 minutes of playing, everyone was killing me constantly, and I just kept running back to the same dude who was making fun of me and getting killed and killed and killed. But once, and Arkham players probably get it right off the bat, but once it clicked, it was just a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to chain from one guy to the next, to the next, to the next. The combat is ridiculous.
It is very much like Arkham, but I think Arkham probably plays it a little bit simpler, and it does pit you with fewer enemies. And so in Mordor, you can literally just go in. If you encounter one of the War Chief orcs or whatever, the Captain orcs, and then they come at you, and then they bring all their friends, and you're just completely overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And early on, I was dying all the time, but you kind of, I guess once you level up a bit and you kind of get a few more abilities, you just become so fluent.
Yeah. And if you're careful, it doesn't matter if you're surrounded by 60 guys. If you're careful with your focus.
Yeah.
You'll get out the other side.
Even the stealth is very good.
Mm.
Yeah. The thing with Shadow of Mordor, from what I got from watching my brother play through it, is that it's like a little bit of Arkham, a little bit of Assassin's Creed, and then its own twist on those formulas.
Mm.
Like it takes a lot of elements from the Arkham fighting system with the combat and the chaining from one person to the next and even the counters, but they also give you more tools that Arkham didn't really afford you. And that kind of makes Middle-earth its own little spin-off of that system. And it's made by the same parent company, Warner Brothers, so there's going to be some of that link between them, because Warner Brothers did Arkham Origins. So you can see like some of that carrying over. But Middle-earth, Shadows of Mordor does enough to kind of still give it its own feel while also feeling similar to Arkham. So it feels similar, but not entirely like it's just pilfering the whole combat engine.
Oh my gosh.
What's
really good is the dating simulator aspect. I'm romancing this one orc named Douche the Mighty, and I've almost got him. Almost.
Well, I'm currently I've got a whole horde of orcs which I'm dating right now.
Wait, hold on. That's not a joke. You guys are actually romancing.
Oh, you mean in the game? Oh, all right, I got it.
I was about to say there. Whoa. Well, you mentioned you're playing this. I'll ask this. What types of games do you enjoy playing?
Gosh, I guess I could tell you what some of my favorite games have been. Maybe I'll give you an idea. I think
that'll work.
From my earlier days, Symphony of the Night was a huge game for me. I mean, I like exploration and powering up, and I'm not a huge MMO guy. I dabble in first-person shooter stuff, but it's usually running Link around, or I like solo for the most part. I got very into Skyrim. I'm a huge Metal Gear nut. I've played almost every Metal Gear, certainly all the tentpole games for the franchise. I'm looking forward to the next one. I liked a lot of what I saw in the short game that came out this year. Some of it was a little dodgy, but a lot to like in there. Let's see what else. I just played I'm a nerd. I play Dungeons and Dragons, guys. I get together with a bunch of other actors and play Dungeons and Dragons.
Awesome.
I really liked Baldur's Gate. It's an old game, but I just played Baldur's Gate on my iPad all last year and adored it.
The enhanced edition.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did a good job with that.
And all this deja vu playing that game, too, because I played it, whenever it was out 10 or 15 years ago, and hearing sort of like, I need some ale, and forgetting that I had all that stuck in the back of my head somewhere. And then add to that an extra layer that half of those people are people I'm working with now, that I was just, like a teenager playing video games and hearing, those were paladins and druids, and now it's Jen Hale or Jim Cummings and the people that I share the room with. It's pretty amazing.
I was loving building up a team in Icewind Dale. I put that on again recently, and you know when you're selecting characters and you go for those little sound bites to, mm-hmm. as to what you want your guy to be, like, whatever, you know,
right.
the whatever noise they're making and stuff. That's always really cool. And I guess you got to sit in the studio doing a lot of that, haven't you?
Oh yeah, more and more, more and more. Especially like even just take the orcs in Mordor, for the Nemesis system to work. Imagine all the variations we needed to record for all of those guys. You're the one who cut my face. You're the one who left me for dead. Oh, I killed you last time, Ranger. So we would just go through hundreds of variations for different instances. For I'm tracking you down. I'm getting the hell out of here. Or I'm getting revenge. That and the Last of Us kind of left me at the end of the day feeling pretty just mentally. And Last of Us is probably worse because it was so grim.
Yeah.
And how's your voice after doing these kind of things?
Not ready for commercials. right afterward, it's just a new challenge of the business. 10 years ago, this didn't really exist. The video game voiceover was, again, like, I need some ale! Or, you know, Snake talking. There was a little bit of shouting, but not a ton. And now everyone's got multiplayer. Everyone's got multiplayer, and it's just, I can't tell you how many times a month I go somewhere and they say, okay, you're burning for 8 seconds. Okay, you're electrocuted. Okay, you're shot in the face, chest, leg. Small pain, medium pain, big pain, vomiting, coughing, drowning, climbing. True, a lot of it is just variation of poo sound, but it wears you down after a while.
Yeah, after a whole recording session of, for instance, Asura and Asura's Wrath, you're not filling up to doing Wonderful Pistachios 2 seconds later.
No, nothing for a day or two after that. And they were good to me. They spread the sessions out with many days in between. Otherwise, it would have been impossible.
Oh, yeah.
I remember you mentioning Asura's Wrath when you're down at the London Comic Con a couple of years back. And you were saying it was fun to do, but it was tough.
Well, all those jobs are fun to do until they're not.
Yeah.
You know, you do it for 10 or 20 minutes and it's not, doesn't really affect you. And at a certain point, and I was just talking to Travis Willingham about this last night. You just start to sweat and you're like, all right, here it comes. Here comes the pain. Your whole body starts to sweat. You start to get a little, not every time, but you can start to feel a little headachy. You feel like you have a cold often at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because you're stripping away the antibodies on the inside of your body.
Yeah, with a sword, I can imagine it's one of those voices where it would be fun. It's fun to do until you start coughing up blood. Then it's just not fun.
Yeah. Someone just asked me, was it one of you guys or somebody else who asked me if I coughed up blood working on Asura's Wrath? I did not cough up blood. I just sounded like this at the end of it. I guess I could have done promo work or been Snake's younger brother.
In a world.
Yeah.
What do the kids think when you go back and you can't talk to them properly?
I mean, I can talk low. There's been very few times where I say, honey, I'm not going to say anything for a day. I mean, that's only happened once or twice. It's just, it's hard to go into a commercial audition, job. And speak at a nice, normal, relaxed tone without any kind of grit in there. Mm-hmm. And then you sure as hell can't go in and be a superhero and support and, you know, shout at Lex Luthor from across from one building to another because you don't have the support. So if it's quieter stuff, you might be okay, but so you lose your support and you lose sort of your clean feel.
Yeah. As it kind of starts stripping away a bit as you keep doing the voice.
Yep. We all share... It started out as this rare secret, and now it's really commonplace, and everybody uses it. But there's this Chinese cough medicine syrup that 5 years ago you had to go to Chinatown here in L.A. to get. Now it's on Amazon, and every studio has it. It's called Nimjam Peipakwa, or something like that. And it's this viscous, dark brown. It tastes like molasses and cough syrup mixed together, and it sort of coats and lets you go a little bit longer, so you'll see an actor yell grenade, get down for an hour, and then a couple of times over the next two, go, look, 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 okay, let's go.
when you're voicing characters, do you have a preference? Do you prefer heroes, villains? What type of character do you get to read for and you say, okay, awesome, I'm gonna enjoy this?
I like weirdos. And my career has borne that out, so yeah, it's I've enjoyed sort of becoming the John Malkovich of the voiceover industry. I mean, I do like getting a hero once in a while because they tend to have more sessions because they're the hero. But I mean, what's not to love about chewing the scenery? I like playing, you know, degenerates and perverts and maniacs. And the one job often at conventions I get asked, we all get asked, what's the one job that you didn't even audition for that you wish you could have gotten? And often people don't have an answer, but I do. They redubbed Akira right before I moved to LA, and I would have loved to taken a crack at Tetsuo in that. I love the misunderstood freaks, I guess.
I really could imagine that with Tetsuo, with you voicing Tetsuo. I really think that would have worked very well in the end.
It's a great dub, though.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, sour grapes for me. Boo-hoo.
That actually ties into a question that I had that someone sent in to me, and that was, do you have any favorite characters that you enjoyed voicing?
Oh, yeah. I don't have one, but I have a small stable. Gollum, obviously.
Right.
Gaara, obviously. I really like Nightcrawler a lot. He was my favorite X-Man growing up.
Oh, and you got to voice him in Wolverine and the X-Men.
That's right. It's one of two times in my career. That's not true. It's one of a few times in my career where I looked at the bunch of sides for the project and went, this is the one that I want to get, and got it. Usually you're like, yeah, this is me. This one's mine. And then somebody else gets it. Nightcrawler was like that. Gar is like that. A part that you may hear me in around December, I hope, is like that. Can't wait for that one to come out. But normally it's, you know, you're just throwing a lot of spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Right, right. In regards to what sticks, in regards to a series, one thing that just came to mind when you mentioned Gaara, since obviously Gaara has become such a big role in Naruto as of now.
Mm-hmm.
Was it something that you had to determine, or was it something the voice director had to determine as to when their character's voice would start changing a bit? Because when, like, Toonami obviously is air, or used to air, rather, part one of Naruto over time, mm-hmm. and it would get to the point where up to the Forest of Death, and you would hear how Gaara used to sound back then, but Gaara as a child in part one, compared to Gaara in Shippuden, is almost an entire spectrum different in terms of voice.
Yeah, his gonads dropped, definitely. and I would say that what I did for younger Gar changed a little bit from the earlier episodes to later on. That might have been also because we had a different voiceover director in the very beginning, who moved on to a different project, I think, and Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, who's amazing, took over.
Oh, okay.
And she just directed me as Gar yesterday, so she's been with it as long as we all have.
Right.
But obviously,
some of the different voices too.
Say again?
I was about to say that kind of explains some of the different voices, too, since early on there were a few voices that got changed
mm-hmm.
as time went on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were finding their feet. That's why mm-hmm. I Believe It went away. They tried it and changed their mind. But there was definitely a big change for Shippuden. I think when I first started the role right at the beginning, he had me pushing it up as high as I could. And then by the time he was turning into the cookie dough monster and killing people in the 70s, I think it came down a little bit, and then it shipped it in. I mean, it's almost me. It's just me speaking out of the back of my throat now.
Right.
The difference between this and this. Hi, I breathe whenever I talk. Hi, guys.
Awesome. I'm never going to be able to hear him without that phrase in my head now.
I am always exhaling all the time. I never inhale ever.
Oh,
there it is. The secret's out. Oh, well.
Going back to what you said about Nightcrawler, what made Nightcrawler your favorite X-Man? That's I rarely hear people say Nightcrawler is their favorite.
Oh, my God. He's the best one. I don't know, because I was a skinny little doofus as a kid comic book reader, and Nightcrawler is not the biggest guy. He's not the toughest guy, per se. He's really lithe and acrobatic, and I liked the idea of flipping around. Prehensile tail ain't bad. And he could teleportation is flipping awesome. I don't know. I think I like his swashbuckler mysteriousness.
There we go. Pirate Nightcrawler is... I think that's the best version of Nightcrawler.
I am currently looking at a bust of Pirate Nightcrawler on my shelf.
I want to be like you when I grow up, sir. I want to be like you.
I have a little closet here at home that I do auditions in, and I've got... This is everything my kids own the entire rest of my home, but in this room I have knickknacks. I have a sort of a wooden Osiris statue and Garas and Red Skulls and stuff. It's my little tiny refrigerator-sized man cave.
The Liam cave. Well, what other comic books did you read growing up? What were some of your favorites?
Well, I read a lot of X-Men. I read Excalibur because Nightcrawler was in it. I read Spawn. I read Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, which in retrospect was not very good. I read... Gosh, what? I mean, I have four or five boxes back at home. What did I read? What did I say? I had Spider-Man. I mean, it was mostly X-Men. I think predominantly X-Men. I'm a huge Joe Madureira fan.
Okay.
Loved Battle Chasers. Almost fainted when I walked in for Darksiders. They didn't really tell me what I was working on. I mean, I auditioned and I had a sense of what the character was supposed to feel like, but I didn't know that I was working with Joe Mad. That was pretty amazing. What else? Wildcats. I loved Jim Lee. Fair amount of Batman. I'll shut up now.
No, keep going.
Well, are you reading anything currently?
Not a ton. I just picked up Saga because all my friends keep telling me I should be reading.
That's kind of what we're doing.
Concur.
I just finished the first volume of Saga, and I should have listened to Danielle last year when she told me to read it. Oh my god, it's so good.
Everybody's right?
Yes, everybody is right.
Okay. The only thing that I stick to religiously and keep track of is Hellboy. I really love Hellboy, and I'm a huge fan of Mike Mignola's work. I love how simple it is and stark, and gosh, he can get such sadness and loneliness in his art, which is really unique.
Do you do the voices in your head when you're reading it too?
Yeah, probably. I really wish that I had been able to play another part. I think Doug Jones did it they did like an animated version, but I've always liked Abe Sapien. And when I was reading the comic, I used to think that's my part. I'm the fish man.
There we go.
The fish man. All right. Well, sort of bringing it back to voice acting.
Mm.
How did you get into the field, and specifically, how did you get into dubbing anime?
I got into it through Crispin Freeman, basically. You all know who he is, yes?
Yes, quite familiar.
Yeah, I went to New York University to study acting and worked on stage a lot for probably, between high school and professionally after college, probably for 10 years. And was doing shows in New York and occasionally leaving town to do shows at the professional theaters around the country. And I was doing a four-man version of Romeo and Juliet in Cincinnati. And the Tybalt and nurse to my Juliet was Crispin Freeman. And at that point, he'd been doing anime himself only for a couple of years. He wasn't quite he was definitely well-liked, but he wasn't sort of the force of nature that he's become. And he would show up every day with a different anime shirt on. He was way, way down the rabbit hole at that point. And we got along and would hang out after rehearsal days. I watched the entire Twin Peaks series with Crispin Freeman. And then the first month we were back in town, he knew that I was into, I really loved Ghost in the Shell and Akira and Gru. You know, we'd talked about it because he would show up with an anime shirt every day. It was kind of hard to avoid it. And the first month back in New York City, he got wind of an audition and called me and asked me if I wanted to try. And of course I did. And I was lucky enough to book sort of the guest starring role on an episode of a show called Boogie Pop Phantom. sometime back in the 1880s, I think that was. And that one led, you know, there was a little bit of Japanese animation getting dubbed in New York, but not a lot. I did 3 or 4 shows there. Tell me if these mean anything to you. His and Her Circumstances, K.O. Beast. Gosh, that might have been it. That might have been it.
K.O. Beast sounds somewhat familiar to me.
Sam Riegel and I played a lion and a chicken. Anyway, we decided to move to Los Angeles because I thought, well, maybe on camera will work. And if it doesn't, maybe I could spin this voiceover into something. And after a couple of months, I got my first anime job. And it just, you know, it took a while. I was doing side jobs for many years, like many actors do. And was picking up voiceover jobs where I could. I was doing a little bit of theater here in L.A. still. And then slowly, it just got bigger and bigger and more frequent. And I mean, let me be honest. When I was rehearsing plays, I was still playing Resident Evil 2 and Metal Gear at night, and in whatever free time I had. So it just seemed like a logical fit, and I never looked back.
So how is that? You sort of grew up.
Love it. I love every aspect of this career. I love it. I love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you sort of grew up playing these games. You grew up, like you said, listening to or hearing people like Jennifer Hale in your games, and now you are working side by side with them. How does that feel?
Oh, it's the best. I loved Cowboy Bebop when I was 18 or 19, and I just saw Steve Bloom at dinner last night. It's surreal, and most of them are, well, not most of them, all of them. There's some of the kindest people I've ever met. And there's a lot of, you know, I live in Hollywood and there's a lot of BS in Hollywood, no question. But for some reason, the actors in the VO community are just a little more warm and welcoming. And just we have a really good time together. And I feel very fortunate.
Right.
That's one of the things when we had Erin Fitzgerald on, that's one of the things she told us as well. It's just like it's a community and everyone sort of looks out for each other. They help each other. It's not a scavenge vulture sort of environment. It's more of a, hey, you know, you eat, we eat, we all eat. So.
Yeah, no. One exception. Erin is not a good person. She's a terrible person. She is a liar. She owes me $50. And if you see her, tell her that I'm coming for her.
See, I was going to say, this is either money involved or he lost a bet. It's one of those two.
Erin is lovely.
We had Erin on the podcast a while ago. Mm-hmm. And this also kind of ties into another request that I had someone sent in where when we recorded the Erin Fitzgerald interview, he sent a request to propose to Erin, to ask Erin to marry him. Mm-hmm. And since that failed,
Aaron's a man, say about that. Yeah.
And since that failed, he now requested the idea of using your voice to propose in his stead because, quote, the masculinity and awesomeness in your voice will allow him to succeed in his goal.
You know, it's really hard to shake the conceptions of your youth. And I was a doofus in high school. I was a doofus. So even though I play suave characters now or, you know, soldiers, that kind of thing, I have never shaken how much of a doofus I am. So I'm glad on the outside I sound so manly, but on the inside I feel like Booger from Revenge of the Nerds most of the time.
He's going to be disappointed to hear that you're not Kane Hywin from FF4.
No, I do not have a giant, do not have purple hair and a giant feather sword. I cannot control sand from a big Halloween gourd, and I have no prehensile tail. It's disappointing. No one's more disappointed than me.
Speaking of Halloween, what are you doing for Halloween?
Let's see. When I go out with the kids, I'm going to recycle last year's costume, which was Bilbo Baggins. I have hobbit fur for my feet and some short pants and a long dusty coat and ears and all that. And then when I go to our sort of VO Halloween party this year, my wife is going to be a vampire and I'm going to be a vampire hunting monk or priest, complete with wooden stakes and holy water, etc. I am looking for a temporary crucifix tattoo to put on my face. If anyone has any leads, send me links to voiceofobrien@me.com.
There we go.
Please note that he said temporary.
Temporary, yes. Please don't send anyone with a needle to my house.
Actual tattoo artists need not apply. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said you wanted the crucifix. I mean, this is one way to get it.
I don't want to be crucified!
But before we actually started the show, you had mentioned to us and you had tweeted out earlier that you were part of Studio Gabriel Project. And you had mentioned how just you were in awe of the process and the product of putting everything together. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Wait, I missed the very beginning of that. Which project?
Studio Gabriel?
Oh, Ghibli?
Ghibli.
Wow. Ghibli. Oh my gosh, it's a heart attack. Ghibli, Princess Mononoke, Totoro, everything.
It's been one of those days.
Castles, okay. I was a very small. I hope I didn't make it sound like I'm the star of the show or anything. It was just a small role, but Princess Mononoke is one of my five favorite films of all time. I love Ghibli's work. I love Miyazaki's work, and the chance to be a part of one finally. It's just a huge, huge honor. There are some actors that I work with who, you know, they don't play video games. They don't watch animation really that often. They're actors and they're happy to work. But some of us, man, are way, way into this. I grew up with Japanese animation. I grew up going to Chinatown as a kid to go to places to watch a tape of Bubblegum Crisis, stuff like that. I've been with it a long time. I had Voltron. I remember my best friend, his dad, taking the two of us to see a movie in a theater when we were 10. I didn't know what it was. It was Nausicaä, and it blew my adolescent mind. So, you know, anytime I get a job, you know, getting Gollum was Liam's childhood dream come true. Getting to be in a Miyazaki film is Liam's childhood dream come true. To yell, "Optimus Prime, look out!" All stuff like that is just, you know, it doesn't cease to flip my wig every day. And I'm not looking forward to the day that Lucifer comes for my soul after something.
the charmed life has to come to an end at some point.
All right, Charlie, pay up.
So have your kids got a chance to hear you in any of the projects you do just casually? Maybe they'll just watch TV and be like, "Hey, is that dad on TV?"
Just a little bit. We don't do a lot of TV consumption with my kids. Mm-hmm. And since so much of the stuff I do is kind of gnarly, they haven't seen much. My son used to see me adapting Naruto episodes a lot around the house when he was younger. But they haven't seen too much. I'm thinking of showing them Star Wars Rebels, which just started. I play a couple small parts in that. And my son has just recently watched the films, the original films, and is getting interested now. I don't know. I'm looking forward to more. I can't play Last of Us, so it might be a bit of a wait.
Yeah. You bring up Star Wars Rebels. It's weird. They're... When we were growing up, you know, we saw 4, 5, and 6 first. But now you actually have this new generation of Star Wars fans that actually saw 1, 2, and 3 and really haven't seen 4, 5, and 6.
So that is just terrible.
So it's just weird seeing something like Rebels. They grew up knowing the clone troopers as the good guys. They don't realize that they turn into the stormtroopers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost the way I look at Doctor Who, which is this thing that's been around forever, and there's all these different versions, and I don't even know where do you start? Does it matter? Kid coming to Star Wars now has got Clone Wars and Rebels and the films, and there's books if he wants to go that far down the rabbit hole. I mean, there's so many different angles on Star Wars now. 1,000 years of Star Wars.
And then suddenly the disappointment washes over you when you ask, "Hey, what was your first exposure to Star Wars? The Phantom Menace?" Oy.
They're not disappointed, though, which is we're the ones who are disappointed.
Yes.
I haven't met many kids who are like, "Yes, movies." You know, there's lightsaber battles and robots.
But I think there's a lot in that film for kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Darth Maul, pretty menacing villain. You've got some pretty awesome fight choreography near the end, and you've got racing. I can't see how anyone, you know, in a certain age range wouldn't like that.
I'm just always disappointed by any kid that says they like Jar Jar Binks.
Hey, man, for reference, kids also like, you know, Big Bird, Snuffleupagus, and Cookie Monster.
Yeah,
so,
the purple.
Very true.
Mm-hmm. So, well, fingers crossed for episode 7. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, there's a lot of different routes they can go with that, especially since they're going post Return of the Jedi. So, a lot of openings for that one.
And they hired a good director.
Yes.
Oh yeah,
that'll help.
I'm trying to think if there's anything we may have missed. We actually kind of covered the gamut in this short amount of time.
I've got something I'd like to ask.
Yes.
For a series that's been a sort of a long runner, like, for instance, Bleach, and now with the impending news of Naruto, what is the process? Like, how does it feel when you realize you were in that series from the near beginning or from the beginning? And to see it come to a close. Like, I know Bleach wrapped up dubbing, according to what I read from Michelle Ruff and Johnny Young Bosch's Facebooks.
Yep, we're all done.
Right, and Naruto, they recently announced for the manga, it's coming to an end within a few weeks. And
right,
the dubbing
probably translates into us being done in a couple of years, I would guess.
Yeah.
Right. So, but to either know that the ending for that series for such a long runner is coming, or the fact that you've already crossed it, like, what does that even feel like? Like, the process of that part just being done.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy. I was just in yesterday working on Naruto and got a little weepy, not weepy, a little nostalgic, because it was harkening back to something at the beginning, and it was an episode that I had adapted and. Remember doing it the first time and realizing that I was, I was I might have been in my late 20s when I did it, and I'm in my late 30s now.
Wow.
I've never had any role this long, and I probably never will again. And we really are a family, the people who work on it. We spend all our time together, often outside of work as well as at work, and it's just I feel very I keep saying it, but it's still true. I feel very fortunate.
This is where you hope that they keep bringing out the games to just to top it up a bit.
Yeah. The manga's winding down. Then Japan will keep going with the series slowly as they stretch it out the way they do. And then eventually that'll get over to us, and we'll work on probably the series for another couple of years, and then there will be, you know, a handful of more games. It's going to slowly, sporadically fall apart, you know, slow down. But
well, yeah, you got to milk the franchise for all it's worth first before you actually close the doors.
We're a little sad, but it's going to be okay.
Excuse me.
No, sorry.
You're fine. You bring up sort of building this community and family. How does that help when you're working with a lot of these same people to have that family feeling?
Well, you don't want to work with jerks. That's true across the board.
Right.
And it's very easy to feel an emotional connection to Naruto because I know Miley so well. And if you trust your director, you're always going to get a better performance if the actor's comfortable. And Mary Elizabeth is one of my closest friends here in LA. So it's a very safe place to explore.
Right.
God, I sound so stoned right now. I'm gonna take the longest nap after this. Oh my gosh. That'll teach me.
You mentioned direction, and obviously that's obviously a key point with regards to voice talent and stuff. Mm-hmm. And as you were saying, like 10 years ago, voiceover in games and things just wasn't quite on the same level as it is now. Do you think that's because there's been such an improvement in the voice direction?
It's a combination of that and technology improvement. I think that they used to have to do this to tape, and it was harder to nail it, and there wasn't any adjusting. Now we can kind of slide things around and stretch things out or shrink them up a little bit if we need to. And then just iteration. You know, people have been working on this stuff now for decades, and just the sort of routine I've got to getting it done is sort of, you know, streamlined over the years. And I think another big part of it, this is just occurring to me now, is that many of the actors who are playing the adult leads watched Japanese animation growing up and like it. And I think that's true for games, too. Actors in early games, the people who said, Jill, Barry, those people probably didn't play any video games that led them to care deeply about what they were working on. But I grew up, you know, I flippin' love Metal Gear. I love voiceover in games when it's well done and in animation. And it's not just some like weird acting gig to me. It's this is the top for me.
How'd you get rid of the when doing the Japanese from Japanese games to the translation to English? How'd you get away from this? I got a lot of fans saying, "Oh, it sounds cheesy."
Well, it's like fighting with your hand tied behind your back a little bit, a lot of it comes down to writing. I mean, if we're talking specifically about Japanese animation being dubbed into English, so much is achieved through the writing. A bad dubbing script will be someone taking the translation, and if there's a pause in the middle, if it's like one long thought in the translation, but the Japanese flap goes ba 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 ba, and the writer's response is just to take the long English sentence the translator gave them and break it in half at a weird moment in the thought, it just sounds lame. And I think a lot of anime dubbing has been a victim of that. But again, as people have been doing it for longer, there are writers who are able to shuffle stuff around, come up with different phrasing or idiom, you know, or colloquialisms that mean the same thing, that better match the picture on screen. I'm a big fan of, instead of, again, breaking a long sentence in half in an awkward moment, come up with two shorter thoughts or fragments that mean the same thing, sell it that way. That just comes from, you know, from one, it comes from one caring about it, wanting it to be good, and then B just reps at bat.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sure that the whole thought comes across as fluently as possible without it sounding disjointed.
Yeah. And the translations we get, sometimes they sound great, sometimes they sound like, I will kill you with sword now. And it's up to the company who's producing the dub and the writer to either put that in or finesse it. Hopefully it'll be finessed.
If you see something on a page and you just don't think it makes sense, do you try and restructure your own sentence which sounds as close to as possible, or
all the time? I've written a lot of scripts for Viz because I've done a lot of Naruto, I've done a lot of Bleach, I've done others though. I think God, I've probably adapted at least 300 episodes of Japanese animation at this point. And I give alts. I will give them one that I think is kind of, you know, strictly to the translation I was given. But I'll put that down in the alt pile, and at the top I'll put my keeper choice. One of my favorite lines I ever adapted was in early Bleach. It was probably in the first three or four episodes, and somebody was talking, I think the Renji character was talking to Ichigo, and he was supposed to tell Ichigo, your Zanpakuto is supposed to be, you know, longer, and that's a little bit, or a certain size, and yours is oversized for who you are. And Ichigo's translation was to reply, so you're saying that my Zanpakuto is bigger than other Zanpakutos? Well, that doesn't sound very cool, and the flapping he had was very short. It was very short. There's not a lot of room. So I changed it, and hats off to Viz for keeping it. It changed into, so you're saying I have a big one, huh? And it was a creative fix. The translation was way too long. It wouldn't have fit into the picture. And so I just thought of another way to say the same thing. And it was a fun way.
And it fits Ichigo's character.
Yeah.
All of us are talking.
Fired.
But no, like Lawrence was saying, you found a way to not only finesse the line, but also showcase the character of the person saying it.
Right. And the longer you work on a show, like now when I'm adapting Naruto, if I'm looking at I'm blanking on the name, and he's one of my favorite characters. This is terrible to me. I'll pick a different character. If you're looking at Naruto and if you're looking at Gaara, they talk totally different. If you're looking at Naruto and you're looking at, I don't know, Tsunade, you know, totally different patterns. Some actors speak a mile a minute. I'm known as the King of Milk because everything I do slowly on my first take. Oh, boy, it is hot in my closet.
And I guess that is our cue. But before we sort of wrap...
Guys, please let me come out of the closet. I'm begging you.
You know, we would, but the Red Skull bust is staring at us, and it's compelling me to keep you in there longer. So it is Halloween, so I would be remiss if I didn't ask, what is the scariest movie you have seen or your favorite scary movie to watch around this time?
My favorite scary movie? I saw Poltergeist when I was 5. That was pretty damn scary.
Well, you also 5.
Yeah, I don't recommend it. gosh, scariest movie. Let me see. Don't let the right one in. What's it called? What was that Nordic movie?
Is that the one that Chloe? What's her name? Where she's a vampire.
It's a foreign film. Yeah. Well, that's a. I don't know if they Americanized it. They did, but I'm talking about the original. That was pretty scary. You know what? Kirk Cameron is making a Christmas movie. That's pretty scary. Go with that.
Oh, God.
I'm going to go with that. That's my answer.
I had purged that from my memory, and now I have to bring up the poster for that because it is just so WTF when you look at it, and then it's like, Kirk Cameron, you're like, okay, this makes perfect sense now. I get it.
Yeah. It is a movie to contest the war on Christmas. My wife and I ironically watched the trailer 2 nights ago. It's pretty spectacular.
I'm Googling this faster than you can believe right now.
See, I feel like that movie would be up there with Birdemic. You have to watch it because you know it is going to be horrendous.
Kirk Cameron is coming from inside the house.
What on earth is this poster?
He's saving Christmas, man. Saving Christmas with his...
I just...
Candy cane and snow globe of cheer. I don't know what's going on.
And don't forget the random dollar bills and the crucifix in the background.
Well, guys, I recommend that once we wrap up here, you go and enjoy it. Watch it several times in a row and prepare yourself for Halloween.
There we go.
I have a Naruto episode waiting for me to adapt as we speak. So I have to jump out and make my deadline. But I wanted to thank you for having me here.
No, we wanted to thank you for taking time out of your busy day to hang out with us, kick it with us. It has been awesome having you. It has been a blast for us. Hopefully everyone that listens will enjoy it as much as we did. Thank you. I really mean that.
Thank you, sirs.
And thank you for joining along with us.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Okay. Be wary of the war on Christmas, gentlemen. It is insidious.
Take care.
Keep that in mind. Take care, Liam.
All right, bye, guys.
Bye.